Welcome to the HBS Cast. I'm your host, Colbert Cannon. We've come to the end of our seventh straight season. Longtime listeners know I like to cap off each season with a recap of our best moments. This season, we had the pleasure of hearing from a pro footballer turned loan trader, a titan in commercial real estate, and more than a few masters of analytics working to enhance everything from risk assessment to global literacy. I want to say a big thank you to each of them for joining me, and it goes without saying, but a very sincere thank you to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We're heading for a quick break, but we'll be back soon with all new conversations. In the meantime, I encourage you to check out any episodes you might have missed from our ever-growing collection. Without further delay, here are some highlights from another fantastic season. We started the year in great company with Jessica Gelman, CEO of Kraft Analytics Group and co-founder of the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, to hear how she's redefining her industry. People see the NFL team as the product on the field, but there's so much that goes on behind that people don't always understand. So yeah, tell me what you were up to. Like, what was the kind of projects you were working on during those early days?
When I was thinking and graduating from business school, I wanted to work with people who I could learn from and who I thought were approaching business in a different way. And the Krafts obviously have completely transformed the sports industry and the approach. And even then, the types of work that we were doing, again, like a lot of it was around Patriot Place, but even more so, very quickly, there was an understanding that the Patriots were developing a very strong fan base that was not just in New England. And understanding those customers, in particular, snowbirds, because at the time, the only way that sports teams really monetized their fan base was through tickets at games. And of course, media was a thing, but not to the extent that it is direct to consumer today. To me, that was the early days of understanding, here's marketing efforts that you take, here's how many customers you acquire, here's how you engage directly, and here's how you can see the avidity of a fan based on how much they're willing to spend on their credit cards.
We had the pleasure of speaking to our managing director and head of North American specialty lending here at HPS Partners, Vikas Keswani. Vikas shares what convinced him to pursue a career in credit investing. So when you stepped in the door, as you said, it was sort of this funky group that had a pretty broad remit. You then make the decision to focus on the credit side. What was it about credit investing in particular that was a draw?
I really enjoyed doing what you've probably heard me say often and describe as deep dive due diligence, really understanding the nuts and bolts of a company, appreciating a strategy and projecting future cash flows. That sort of analysis always sat well with me. I was less oriented around being in front of a computer screen, watching valuations move dramatically and reacting to them. That was less my personality. I considered a career in private equity, which obviously is a very attractive career to have. But what turned me away from that was the idea that you'd be spending more time with fewer investments, getting involved with management, the board, compensation, corporate governance, tuck-in acquisitions, getting even deeper into these businesses. Whereas I really enjoyed doing the due diligence, but I wanted to see hundreds of companies, not a couple a year. And the thing about credit is it does afford that. You get to be real deep on these businesses, but you're not controlling them. And it was a good balance for me, again, of that sort of deep dive due diligence, but seeing a lot, satisfying my curiosity around business models.
We found out how Chris Halpin, now the chief financial officer of IAC, earlier took a risk and a pay cut to work at another dream organization, the NFL, and how it paid off long term. You mentioned this. You came in at a more, you know, baseline level, and that was a good thing for you. Why?
Two things. I would say the NFL, it is non-intuitive. You come in and you're like, that's kind of weird that it's set up this way. And it's always after like 9 plus minus months, what either works or it doesn't. But if it works, it's like Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, where all of a sudden you see the zeros and ones and it makes sense. I think the second thing is, it is an extremely high stress place, and almost everything is cross-functional. There's very little you can do at the NFL or do well where you do not win over and work closely with other stakeholders, but you got to come in and figure out who's who. It was very helpful in terms of getting in and figuring out how the place worked and building relationships.
We took Crisis Management 101 with Aldo Mazzocco, the CEO and general manager of Generali Real Estate. You know, how did you manage through those crises when others obviously got very wrong-footed? Like, how did you actually do that?
I grew in a very pioneeristic area of real estate in the northeast of Italy with industrial shareholders. So when they provided the capital in the private equity vehicle, they said only one thing: please don't lose this money. If you are able to take out profit, that would be fantastic. But first of all, don't lose this money. And that approach is still in my mind. So when I perceived that the market was changing, I think you have the feeling of something going wrong, not when stupid people are doing stupid things, but when highly reputed professionals are doing stupid things, the market will collapse.
Best-selling author and investor Patrick McGinnis set the stage for a now ubiquitous term he coined back in business school. Listeners know I love a good origin story. You write an article in Harbus, the HBS publication, about FOMO. How did this all come about?
Okay, so I told you I took my GMAT on September 10th, 2001. So obviously I woke up the next morning. I lived in Lower Manhattan. We had the 9/11 attacks here. It changed everything. You wake up that morning and you're sort of like, you sort of just think like, I've got to live every moment to the fullest. It's a lot kind of what it's felt like coming out of COVID in a sense. And in this moment of time where there's so much instability, this is the roaring 20s. I've got to just, every minute is precious. I've now realized that you've gotten that wake up call. And so when I got up to HBS, it was such a choice rich environment, so many things I could potentially do. And I just thought, this is my one chance. I'm from the small town of Maine. I've managed to somehow end up here. I need to do everything. And so I did. I tried to do everything, every social event, every job interview, every company presentation, all of it.
So you were partially Alex and you were also partially Jason Schwartzman Rushmore, joining every single club.
Oh, yeah. I joined the sailing club. Like I hadn't been on a boat. It was just, it was a lot. And so as a result, I soon realized, and you'll remember this from your own times, it was stressful. I was overwhelmed. There were too many things to do. I was half doing them. I was constantly tired and sick, hungover and stressed out. And I just realized that it was all fear.
We were thrilled to welcome in Geetha Murali, the CEO of Room to Read. She shared how she's using her affinity for numbers to drive her global literacy nonprofit forward with a sustainable model that also makes sound business sense. Development jobs, I sometimes find, no matter who you are, they can be hard for people to adjust to. Asking people for money, no matter how good the cause, can be hard at times. How did you evolve the part of your skill set that, you know, was new to you? How did you learn how to be good at that job?
Interestingly, the part that came easier to me than other development professionals was the quantitative side, obviously, given my history. And so at that particular moment in Room to Read's history, it needed to think about financial sustainability and its revenue model and diversifying. And that part came easy to me. I could build financial models and I could think about diversification. Yeah. It's been quite the revelation for me, in fact, and probably a huge positive for those interested in social justice, that the binary between for-profit and nonprofit is really a thing of the past. I mean, people and organizations have become infused with a sense of purpose in unique ways. And I think the spectrum from for-profit to nonprofit is just getting wider in range and nuance with impact investing and ESG frameworks and cause marketing. You are seeing so many new and innovative ways for nonprofit, private, and public sector to work together. And I've found that in my career, just because social sector organizations marry practice and purpose and we infuse our hearts into what we do, it doesn't mean that we're not founded and run on sound business principle.
We learned some key lessons of how to weather tough times ahead from Michael Fenstermacher, the managing director and co-head of North American Core Senior Lending here at HPS. When the 2008 financial crisis hit, tell me what that experience was like.
Again, like the moment where we found out JP Morgan was buying or merging with Bank One, it was scary, right? And that I'd never seen a cycle like that. The dot-com bubble burst when I was graduating college. And so to actually be in a seat where you actually have fiduciary duty to people in that economic environment and trying to see your way through the fog and take the opportunity where it exists or avoid the pitfalls where they may be is harrowing. And so I would say at the very earliest stage of our formation as a firm, the emphasis on diligence, the emphasis on checking, double checking, triple checking your work, bringing all the resources and relationships of the firm to bear to help hone that analysis and pressure test things like, yep, your favorite question, who buys this firm if this goes sideways? That question's been getting asked since 2008. And it's an important question because it begets a lot of other good questions.
We sat down with Jay Yoon, the CIO of New York Life Investment Management and chairman of New York Life Investments Asia, to discuss how sometimes the best way to move forward is to look back. We're recording this in the first quarter of 2023. Markets remain unsettled with inflation and rates both up for the first time in over a decade. How do you see the macro unfolding? How does the current situation resolve itself?
Yeah. So I've now started to do some YouTube videos for some Korean media newspaper, economic newspaper. And I actually started to see this market pretty well. And I think one thing I wanted to share with everyone is it's so important to understand history, right? And for me, history or experience rather is 94. Some of that is relevant for today's environment, but some of the experience goes back to the 70s and 80s of inflation. I think many investors didn't quite understand coming out of Jackson Hole when Powell referenced Arthur Burns. You know, what I heard is, I don't want to be next Arthur Burns. I don't want to go down in history as the guy who screwed it up twice.
We rounded out the season with Deji Davies, head of European loan trading at JP Morgan. This former pro footballer turned investor discussed his latest undertaking, serving as an ambassador of change for English football. You were recently appointed as the chair of the Inclusion and Advisory Board by the FA. Now, what does that mean? Like, what is that role? And what do you intend to do from that seat, Deji?
Sure. So the FA, for people that might not realize, that's the governing body of football in the UK. So the FA administer over the 23 England teams, and people may know just the men's and the women's teams, both of which have been very successful of late.
Your Lionesses have been incredibly successful. It's very exciting.
Amazing, right? So my role and the IAB, the Inclusion Advisory Board that I'm now chairing, the responsibility there is to try and drive more inclusion across the game. And that's from a participation level at grassroots, to playing level professionally, to off pitch as well, to coaching, and to, you know, even to ownership. So to really drive a more inclusive environment is the objective. And now we really want to push the dial and actually achieve some real success and outcomes, which is not an easy task. It's a 3-year post that may roll over, but I look at it as a kind of a long-term project to really look back and hopefully feel like we've really improved inclusion for members of the UK that otherwise wouldn't have necessarily felt football was for them or didn't feel invited to it.
Thanks again to our guests for joining me this season. Check out our show notes to learn more about their respective roles. You'll also find links to all of our best ideas. This podcast was brought to you by Atwill Media with HBS Investment Partners. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. See you in the next season. The opinions expressed on this podcast are that of the host, Colbert Cannon, and the guest of each episode, and do not necessarily reflect the views of HPS Investment Partners.